Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Fuming.
Fuming, as always.
So angry. So angry.
Dare I ask?
Some of the anger's been taken away, but I'm still angry. Matt Hancock.
Ah.
I mean, people must know who he is. He was our health secretary who told us all that we had to stay away from people. No hugging, nothing like that. And there he is with his tongue down, his lover.
Now, I sense that this could get us in choppy water because we sometimes try not to get too political. But I think we can talk about this one person without really talking about politics either side.
Well, we'll see how we go. because you see, he resigned at the weekend.
Eventually.
Eventually, this is the thing. So before that, if we'd been recording before he'd resigned, I would have thought the whole podcast, you probably wouldn't have said a word. I would have just ranted. Because you know when you feel so angry and you can feel it in the pit of your stomach?
Yes.
And you don't feel you can do anything about it. You've got no power to do anything about it. And I was, I'm going to paint a lovely picture for you. I was sitting on the toilet and I had the radio on and I could hear this all unfolding. And as I was sitting there, I was ranting to myself that the balls on this man it's one thing he's had an affair. I feel sorry for his wife, although I think actually she's got the better deal here. He's fucked off.
He has now left his wife, hasn't he?
Yeah, apparently he came clean the night before the story appeared on the front page of the newspaper the next day. So he's obviously a man of great integrity.
Of course.
And he just said, I'm very sorry that I was caught on CCTV snogging my mistress. You know, I've obviously broken the protocols of social distancing that I've been asking you to all abide by for the last 18 months. But I'm not going to resign. I'm going to continue to save lives, protect the NHS. So I'm sorry. And then the Prime Minister, our Prime Minister.
Said, nothing to see here.
I said, yeah, oh, that's fine. Yeah, it's the end of the matter. No, it's not, mate.
We have been here before, and I think we should, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt from past experience. You know, the whole Dominic Cummings debacle. I possibly think, you know, you're being a bit harsh. Maybe Matt Hancock's tongue was feeling a bit sore, so he thought he'd take it for a test. And he got his aid and he shoved it down her throat.
Yeah,
You know, very much like a drive for your eyesight type thing.
Right. So he was actually conducting a COVID test.
He was doing what anyone would have done in his position.
And now he's moved in with her. Right.
Has he really?
I think so. I think they're now together. They're basically shacked up together.
Oh, and, poor wife.
And the Prime Minister who himself has the morals of an alley cat, and whose moral compass is so off skew, it's unbelievable that he was still voted in, and said, oh, nothing to see. And then when basically the only thing Matt Hancock was sorry about was that he was caught. That's the only thing he's sorry about. And because basically the tension wasn't going and it was clear he was going to have to, he sort of went, oh, I am going to have to go now. I'm really sorry. And then the Prime Minister has the balls to say, when he was questioned about that, why did you back him? And then he went, well, I think it was the good amount of time to reflect on these matters. Don't take credit for it. You were supporting him. You fucking jumped up little prick.
But let's be fair to Boris, which isn't something I thought I'd say in a hurry. He can't exactly sack anyone for any sort of moral indiscretion, can he?
No, because they're all so morally corrupt.
Well, he's basically anything any of his ministers do, he's basically done it, been there and bought the t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly. And not only that, it's everything else that goes with it. I mean, there's lots of stories that, you know, whether this woman got the job because he was doing her. We don't know that yet. Her brother is some bigwig in a company that all managed to get an NHS contract. At the level of corruption in this government, and Matt Hancock just this week epitomises it.
I've been listening to the radio quite a lot this week, and I've heard quite a few people calling up the radio station to say, you know what, he's doing a good job. This is before he resigned.
He's
a great health minister. This doesn't matter. It does.
There's a brilliant guy. I think he's a satirist. I don't think this is serious, but there was a wonderful thing on Twitter from this guy called Tom Peck, who I think he's a columnist and stuff, but I think he's being slightly sarcastic. He said, thing is, whoever had a camera in Matt Hancock's office must also have hundreds of footage of him working flat out to single-handedly end the pandemic, and they chose to leak the one where he does something wrong. Pretty sad, really. I hope they're happy. Right? So I think he's being sarcastic.
Let's hope so.
But there's a brilliant response that just says, yeah, it's terrible that people focus entirely on the people Fred West murdered and not his fantastic work as a builder. No, that just about sums it up, didn't it?
I think so.
The thing is, this goes on and on. Do you know what I mean? If you take party politics out of it, whoever's in charge, just eventually they become so corrupt. And what I don't understand about politics, and there's a lot I don't understand about politics, but here's one thing I don't understand. Over the last few weeks, this government have been found to have acted unlawfully on numerous occasions.
Yes, I think Priti Patel, she was found by the Ministry of or some sort of ministerial code as to breach of that for bullying. I think Boris tossed that report in the bin, and then the guy who ran the report walked the plank, I think,
right,
in disgust.
There's been several. And I just think, well, so what? What's the consequences of that? There doesn't seem to be any consequences. Do you know what I mean? It's like we have acted unlawfully, so we just brush that under the carpet and we all move on. And the thing is, if you watch anything with any politician, they try to brainwash you. That's their job as a politician, to brainwash you. And I don't know if you notice this, but whenever a government minister is interviewed now, they will use the word unprecedented so many times, as if they can do whatever they like. They can be as shit as you want. But if they keep saying unprecedented, we go, oh, yeah, no, I mean, it's fine that they're this shit because it's been unprecedented times. And we don't need to ask questions. We don't need to hold them to account because, what did you say? Oh, it's unprecedented. That's right. Yes, it's been unprecedented. It was unprecedented. And that's why Matt Hancock felt the need to fuck his aide. Do you know? Because it was unprecedented times. Unbelievable.
It does also bring up slightly larger security questions as to how either a covert camera or just a regular camera was installed seemingly without Matt Hancock's knowing. And who also managed to get hold of that footage and leak it?
They promised an inquiry into that. Of course they'll have an inquiry into that. We won't have an inquiry on our failings during the pandemic. Well, that can be looked at in the future. That's for the future generations to look back and decide what we did wrong, what we did right. But we'll need to launch an inquiry straight away into who hid a camera to see our health secretary feeling up his missus.
Dominic Cummings. Sorry, nasty cough.
What I'd like to know is what she sees in him. What this woman's. I mean, he's such a wet lettuce, isn't he?
Yes. I mean, I imagine power of sorts.
Yeah. He always reminds me of the kid at school who never did his homework and then was always just blagging. You know, the maths homework was to, I don't know, go home and look up, find out about Pythagoras' theorem, and we will discuss it in the next lesson. Matt Hancock goes home. He does fuck all. It's like, no, I don't need to. No, I don't need to. Don't need to do this. And then comes the lesson. He goes, so Hancock, tell me about it. And he goes, the thing is about Pythagoras. I mean, it's really important that we all know about Pythagoras' theorem. It's really one of the fundamentals of mathematics that we should all really know about. And
let me be clear.
Let me be clear. This is something we all must know about. But actually, I won't know about it because when it comes to the exams, I'll just cheat. I'll just cheat. I'll have Christopher Whitty next to me and he'll get me out of the shit.
Let's get Pythagoras done.
Yeah. When I'm bumbling around like the ludicrous piece of crap that I am. Have you also seen the other thing that he supposedly used his own personal emails for private and confidential emails?
No, I mean, nothing would surprise me at this point.
I'd like to know what his personal email is because now that we know that he's a dirty dog, that he's a slimy, dirty dog. I wonder whether he's got like a bit of a sexy personal email. He's like, the Cockster. The Cockster at hotmail.com. That's like his little personal email.
Yeah, it's tragic to think that the people running the country might have Hotmail accounts, isn't it?
Oh, dear. But why aren't we all out on the streets about this lot running the country? We should all be just out on the streets going, just stop it. Just behave.
I don't know. Well, people are, certainly my end. I was awoken. Well, actually, I wasn't really awoken last night. I was struggling to sleep. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, some bloke was walking down the street on his phone, screaming down his phone. I don't know why. He was very annoyed. And he was shouting about Matt Hancock.
Good. This is how angry people are.
At 2 a.m. in East Grinstead.
It's the sort of thing I'd be doing. If I'd had a few drinks, I'd be out on the street shouting about it.
He sounded quite coherent to me. He didn't sound pissed. He was just walking down. I was trying to snooze here. And all I can hear out the window is, and I'll tell you what, people aren't going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
They're not going to tolerate this for much longer.
Yeah, yeah. Except, have you ever seen that film Network?
No, I haven't.
It was a film about 1980, I think. And it's about this news anchor. It stars, was it his name? Peter Finch, I think. And he got a posthumous Oscar for this role. And he plays this newsreader who sort of ends up having a bit of a breakdown. And he gets everyone to go to their windows and shout, we're as mad as hell and we won't take it anymore. And I sort of think that's what we need. We always go, well, I stopped doing it, but, stand on your doorsteps and applaud the NHS at 8 o'clock and that's great. The NHS should be applauded on numerous occasions. There's no question of that. But we should all have a night at about 8 o'clock where we go out and have some sort of protest about the shower of shit. And as I say, look, I'm putting this across all politicians, no matter what party, because how many of them do you look at and go, God, I can actually trust you?
The protests wouldn't do anything. We had weeks and weeks of applauding and thanking the NHS.
Yeah.
And then what did Boris do? He gave them like a 1% pay rise.
Yeah, 1%.
So, and then I think he thought maybe we can pay them in claps.
Yeah, unless
that could be their bonus, applause.
Yeah, it was a way when the nurses are struggling to pay their rent. Go, well, don't worry, we'll go out and applaud you again. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's unbelievable. But also, again, when you look at it, why have we got this system where we've got these people who, their career option is to be in power? All politicians will say, I got into this because I wanted to make a difference. Some of you probably did. And there are probably many local MPs who do very good jobs. I haven't seen many of them, but they're probably not. But the moment they start going up the rungs of the ladder, and then the ones that make that journey, that's because that's what they want. I mean, Boris probably wanted to be prime minister from the moment he was born. He was probably told he was due to be prime minister because that's the sort of background he's from. It's like you are the ruling class. You are from that class system. You need to rule. And so that's what his whole aim has been in life. He's got it and he's so out of his depth that it's unbelievable. But how many prime ministers in my lifetime have not been out of their depth? I think all of them.
Yeah.
Right. Now, prime minister, I would say slightly different, but why do we not have in other positions people who just know what the fuck they're talking about? Why don't we have a health secretary who was a doctor? Have someone who was a doctor for years, put them in charge of health. Why have some lily-livered little prick like Matt Hancock? He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Well, I'm so angry, Ben. I'm sorry. No, people tune into this podcast. Oh, this would be a... I'd have a fun half hour with Trev and Ben this week. Like, what is wrong with Trev? He's quite angry this week.
But I'm not sure that even putting someone who knows what they're talking about in charge would help. Because I think... I don't know if you've seen it, but I think even today, at the time of recording, there's footage going around of one of our lead professors, I think,
being
it's Chris Whitty,
in a park,
being harassed by two young lads in a pub. So, a park. I think you wouldn't really want to have that job either, would you?
Yeah, and then also you're like that dickhead Michael Gove, who's just got one of those faces. I wouldn't be able to stop punching it.
Do you know what I mean? Just when you felt exhausted, you'd muster more strength.
Oh
Michael
God,
Gove.
You'd see his little flappy fish lips, and you'd think, oh, they need a bit more punching.
I should stress, we're not condoning attacking politicians. No. We're just saying it would be hard to stop.
I'm not saying start, but if you did start, it'd be hard to stop. That's all we're saying. Do you remember he once said, I think we've all had enough of experts? Have we?
Yes.
Have we all had enough of experts? I think we've had enough of pricks like you. Oh, God, Ben. It's depressing. It's depressing.
Mate.
I've got this theory that we'd probably be better off without them.
Is this like the theory that if you were to take away all the traffic lights, the roads would run smoother?
Yeah, the problem is there's so many pricks on the road. I suppose that's the problem with the sort of analogy, isn't it? Is that, but, you know, I just think we'd probably be all right on our own. I don't think we would need people to tell us what to do. And I'm sure there's lots of flaws in that argument. But sometimes that's how I feel. I just think, what do we need these people for? I don't see what they achieve.
Well, I mean, it does appear that the people in government at the moment are unsackable. It seems like so long as they support Boris, he will refuse to sack them.
Yeah.
And you do wonder if Matt Hancock hadn't resigned, would this just keep rumbling on until it all went away?
Well, no, because the thing about Boris is until he has to act, he doesn't. That's
true.
There's a great quote I heard. I think it was Michael Heseltine, who is a conservative, right? So this is Michael Heseltine, who said something about Boris is the sort of man who will see a crowd running, then run to the front of it and say, follow me! And and that's exactly what he does. So he'd do nothing. He'd say, well, the matter's closed. And then just when the pressure was too much, when his own party would have started putting the pressure on and he would have had to have done something, he would have got rid of him because he doesn't do anything until he has to.
Yep. I've got nothing to say. I think you're absolutely right, sadly.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, I'll tell you what did cheer me up a bit.
Go on.
Well, I say it cheered me up, it also annoyed me, but it's a slightly lighter-hearted subject, I suppose.
Go on.
This push for nationalism, right? I suppose because of Brexit and all of that, there's a push for nationalism, right? And, you know, was it Oxford University? One of the universities said they were going to take down a portrait of the Queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So amongst certain people, that's caused upset. You
wasn't
know,
it a vote? And, like, it was something like 8 students or something like that who actually voted to take this thing down.
Was it?
This caused a fucking outrage. And I think, by the way, this is all a big tactic to distract us from the politicians, but there you go.
Well, there's one MP who says that all homes, companies and institutions in the UK should be offered a portrait of the Queen. So she says, along with the British Monarchy Society, that she's got this campaign. This is a Tory MP called Joy Morrissey. And she says her campaign wants the government to make portraits of the Queen available to every home, company or institution that would like one.
Every home?
Yeah. Now, look.
What? In the country?
Yeah. Now, look, if you want a portrait of the Queen, have one. But I'm not funding it with my tax money. I'm not.
How much would that cost if every house in the land said, yeah, I'll have a portrait. Yeah, I'll have one of the Queen. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And every institution that wants one. I mean, we'd be talking millions of pounds, right? If not billions. But we'd only give the nurses 1%. But I tell you what, we could probably find the money to make portraits of the Queen available.
Jesus.
It's all very North Korea, isn't it? I'm surprised they're not saying, why don't we want to have one of Boris? Why don't we want to have one of Boris in our homes? That's where we're heading. That's where this is going to end up, isn't it? So he's such a great leader. Let's have one of Boris. Look, if you want a portrait of the Queen, I don't have a problem with that. If you want one, have one. But I'm not paying for it.
You got to fund it yourself.
Yeah. Just put a stamp on the wall if you want one. It's not going to cost you a fortune. It just go second class, put it up. You can even photocopy it and blow it up to A4 if you want.
There you go. Done.
So I've done it. I've saved the country. I've saved the country millions. Absolutely. And then have you heard this song that certain groups of people are encouraging, I think, more children to sing in schools, like a little anthem?
I've heard a snippet of it, and I must admit, when I first heard it, I laughed because I thought it was like satire. I thought it was a joke.
No.
And then I thought, that's quite funny. But until I found out it was sincere and true, and at which point I stopped finding it funny and just thought, oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, I think it's called One Britain, One Nation.
It is.
And again, it's one of those things that's very North Korea. You know, like those songs in North Korea that are all about the dear leader and how amazing he is, and they are like gods, aren't they?
Yes.
And I don't know if this song quite goes that far, but it does go on and on about we are one Britain, we have one dream to unite all people in one great team. And the verse, like the first verse, our nation survived through many storms and many wars. We've opened our doors and widened our inland shores. No, we haven't. We've just closing all the borders because we want to be little England. We want to be little England.
Oh, dear.
We celebrate our differences with love in our hearts. I don't see much evidence
of that.
Since
when?
United forever, Never Apart. Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
I'd love to, yeah.
So if you want to get the idea that it's, you know, again, very North Korean, get children singing it with great passion, here's a little clip of it.
We are British and we have a dream.
Strong Britain, Great Nation, just in case you hadn't got the gist of it.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be an all-encompassing, all-loving...
Yeah.
Can I raise a point of issue?
Go on.
Northern Ireland. where I'm from, where I was born.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is,
not,
right?
Not welcome anymore.
I'm probably going to be accused of Britain bashing. I'm not, right? Of course there's great things about being British. There's great things about being any nationality. And I don't mind a little bit of national pride and even a bit of jingoism. But having something like that that's just utter bullshit, again, it strikes me of just, if you want kids to start singing this, that's a bit of brainwashing going on, isn't it?
Yeah,
Am I becoming a little bit... conspiracy theories now.
Well, I'm thinking of the Pledge of Allegiance in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, at least it's not a song. It's a bit of a rhyme, I suppose.
Right? Yeah.
It's got a certain rhythm to it. But, I mean, that's not half as annoying as that, is it?
No. I'm watching a lot of the football at the moment. And I always enjoy watching the bit where they sing the national anthems. I always think that's quite nice. But do you know what I've never got my head round. And some nations do it and some don't, and we're a nation that doesn't do it, is the whole hand on the heart when you're singing a national anthem.
Yes.
Is it just saying, my heart is in my nation? That's sort of a real, that's where the pride is. Is that what that's
I can
about?
Assume so. I actually heard a really interesting fact about the national anthem recently.
Yeah.
Do you know why countries sing the national anthem at sporting events?
I don't really know.
It's really interesting. Basically, it goes back years and years and years to when the New Zealand team played Wales. I'm not sure if it was football or rugby. I can't be quite sure. But basically, the New Zealand team, as they do before the game, did the haka.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Welsh didn't really know what to do in response to this. So they just sang the national anthem back at them.
Oh, wow.
And then it caught on.
So it's basically a war cry, is what it is. that's what it's for.
I thought, how very beautifully Welsh to just sing the national anthem.
I'd be terrified if the haka was going on in front of me. I don't think I'd be able to muster the spirit to sing back at it. I'd be like, I'm off. That's too frightening. I'll tell you what isn't frightening. If you go on YouTube and search like 1970s New Zealand rugby haka, and clearly in the 1970s, they didn't really have any people of Maori heritage in the national team. And watching these ridiculous men trying to do the haka, it wasn't terrifying at all. It's so funny. I highly recommend just putting that into YouTube. If you want a good laugh, that's well worth a watch.
I remember a few years ago when we were first first going into the radio and stuff, I think I was a complete idiot, as I am to this day, but I've at least learned something, because I remember telling you I was very much against the haka, and I thought that the English should simply turn their back on it, because I thought it was just basically a quite an aggressive fuck you to the opposition to try and scare them before the game. And I thought, no, we should turn our backs on this, you know, which was me being a complete moron, not understanding that it was of deep cultural importance to the people of New Zealand. So, but I love the haka now. I can't get enough of it. It's a great thing to watch.
When I was in New Zealand and I went to a Maori village and they performed the haka, and it was just one of the most quite moving things. And the thing about poking the tongue out, that's all part of it. It's quite incredible. I've got a thing on my shelf that I bought in the Maori village of I think I've got the pronunciation right. It was Whakarewarewa. I think it was.
Beg your pardon?
I think you pronounce it Whakarewarewa, I think was
okay.
What it was. Anyway, I'm in this Maori village and I'm in the shop and I buy this little carved Maori. and he's got his tongue out. And I think it's called a, I haven't got the bit of paper in front of me. I've still got the bit of paper because she wrote it down for me in the shop. I think it's called I don't want to say what it's called, Tiki Tiki or something, but it's a little Maori symbol, and I still have that on a shelf in my house. But I'd say the most surreal thing that happened to me, I'm in the Maori village, and I'm sort of, you're going through, you're learning about Maori heritage, and I'm in the shop, and I'm having quite an in-depth conversation with the woman behind the counter about, you know, it's a great to learn, and, you know, the amazing thing is, like, they've got... there's a Catholic church. There's also an Anglican church because all the different cultures came. And I was talking to her about that. And then just not even in the distance, the EastEnders theme tune strikes up. She's got her little television on. And there I am, the other side of the world. I'm so invested in the Maori traditions at that moment. And then sort of ruined the moment a little bit.
I can imagine. But I do like the idea, though, that we could use our new song, you know, to scare the shit out of our opposition in the world of sport, you know. So
yeah.
But they can do the haka and try and, you know, scare us and impose that on us and, you know, make us fear them. And then we can hit them back with One Britain. That'll shit him up. Trev, I've been furious this week, not for the same, maybe more justifiable reasons that you have, but personally, I've been fucking livid.
All right, what's been getting on your tits?
I've been trying to deal with a company who I probably shouldn't name. So let's call them Shittest Gas.
Right, okay.
So Shittest Gas do my gas and electric bills.
Yeah.
And I've had a very simple request. I've been trying to deal with some legal documents. They, coincidentally, at the same time as I need a document from them to prove proof of address, they've simultaneously decided that my bills are due a quadrupling.
Right.
For no reason. So I've been trying to deal with them on that and at the same time get a letter. And for the purposes of what I'm dealing with legally, I need, very simply, a copy of our bill, ideally with the correct amount on it, but that isn't actually important right now. But it has to have Mrs. Ben's name on it.
Right, okay.
So I phoned them up, waited half an hour on the line, and then got through to them, updated, fine. We'll have an email to you in 10 minutes with your bill, with your wife's name on it. Perfect. Nice. A week goes by. So I'm thinking, this email isn't coming, is it? So I get back on the phone to Shittest Gas.
Have you checked your spam?
I have checked my spam multiple times.
Okay.
No luck. Right. So I get back on the phone, get through to someone else, explain the problem. I said, a week ago, they said 10 minutes. I said, they shouldn't have told you that. I said, really? Can we have an updated thing? Let me just get your files here, Mr. Harmer. Okay. Oh, yes, we can see. Oh, they haven't updated your file with your wife's name.
Right.
I said, okay. They said, I'll just do that now for you. Clackety clack, clack, clack. Okay,
I don't believe those keyboards at call centres are connected to anything. I think they're just there for sound effects. Do you know, sorry to interrupt, but back in the day, people of a certain age who lived in London will remember Dr. Fox, Neil Fox, on Capital Radio in the evenings, did the jukebox, right?
Mm.
And what he'd do is he'd have someone on the phone and they'd say, hi, Dr. Fox, can you please play for me? We didn't start the fire. And you'd hear clacking of keyboard, right? And I then met someone years later who worked on that show briefly, and he said, well, all the phone calls are recorded and the keyboard isn't connected to anything, it's just there for sound effects. And I reckon, well, I was so disappointed by that because I thought this was before probably everything was loaded on computers where you could actually do that. I was so disappointed, but I reckon that's what happens in call centers. They go, I'm just updating you, and they clack away. It's not doing anything. It's just there for noise.
It sounds very much like our days working on the radio, except no one told the presenters that the equipment wasn't connected either.
Yeah, we just found out when it stopped working.
So eventually, I get through to this person who informs me, no, it's not been updated. They've not sent an email. Nothing's happening. So I'm a bit pissed off at this point. So I say, right, can you update it with Mrs. Ben's name and send me a bill with her name on it via email?
Right.
They said, right, I've just updated that for you, Mr. Harmer, and I've sent the email.
Oh,
I said, how long should that take? They said, 24 hours.
Right. Oh, well, it's not 10 minutes. They're being more realistic now.
I said, okay, so that's going to come through, is it?
Yeah.
I said, yeah. I mean,
you're sounding very incredulous about their promise here, Ben.
Oh, well, I've got reason. You know, I've been stung before. So I begrudgingly let them off the phone.
Yeah.
And sure enough, 24 hours goes by, nothing.
Nothing.
I check my spam folder, nothing.
Right, yeah.
So then I get back on the phone, furious,
to
British Gas. I don't even try and get through to one of their, you know, call center people. I just go straight through the complaints department.
Oh, good on you. Yeah, yeah. That's it. How long are you on hold for the complaints department?
To be fair to British Gas, I got through to the complaints department reasonably quickly.
Right.
And I spoke to someone who said, oh, yeah, the first person definitely shouldn't have told you that.
Right.
I said, okay, well, they did. And the second person, he said, oh, yeah, looking at the records here, yeah, they haven't updated your file either.
See, I told the keyboard's doing the fuck all.
They haven't tried to send you an email either.
You talked to Matt Hancock.
He said, so I'll update your file.
Here we go. Yeah.
Of course you will.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll get your email out straight away and I'll get you a letter out in the post.
Right.
So this morning, this was about 4 days ago, this morning I can confirm no email ever came.
Right.
But I did get a letter through the post from Shittest Gas, and they have finally updated the records with my name.
With your name.
Dear Mr. Harmy.
Harmy, brilliant.
Harmy. Is there any mention of Mrs. Harmy? Is there fuck? So they have finally updated the names. They have changed my name to Mr. Harmy.
Brilliant.
How difficult can it be to change a name and send an email?
I mean, were you pissed when you... Mr. Harmy.
I was probably spitting feathers with rage at the time, but I did go through my spellings, and Mrs. Harmer doesn't spell her first name in the traditional way, so I went through that about 19 times.
Yeah.
But now I'm just Mr. Harmy, and you know what? I can't be bothered to correct it anymore. I'll pay them whatever they want, take my money, bill Mr. Harmy. I'm out.
Oh, mate, this is the incompetence of this is what I think, right? Here's another one of my I've done my thing about politicians, but let me expand my theory on incompetence a little.
Go on.
Because I just think human beings we are an incompetent species. We are animals who have created something we cannot cope with. We should be, you look at any animal in nature, it just does what it's intended to do, right? We've created societies. We've created procedures that we just can't deal with. We have this inbuilt, we've gone far beyond where we've actually evolved to, or we have inbuilt incompetence, and we're never going to be able to cope with the way we're moving forward. You've got brilliant minds who create technology. They are incredible people. You've got brilliant minds in science and medicine. Incredible. But what we actually do with that, we're incapable of making it work properly.
It's enraging. It makes my blood boil. And I actually wonder if I brought this on myself a little bit, because after I dealt with the third person on my third occasion, I didn't believe a word of it.
No.
I knew he was going to fuck it up somehow. And then afterwards, I get a text message saying, would you like to leave Shittest Gas some feedback?
Oh, right.
And I thought, yes, I would.
Yeah.
So I basically slated him, the company, everyone I'd ever dealt with. And I wonder if maybe he'd seen that review and has decided to troll me and thought, oh, okay, you'll get your letter, Mr. Harmy.
If that's happened, then that's unacceptable as well. As much as I could probably sense his indignant rage at being slated by you, if he'd done his job properly in the first place, that wouldn't have happened.
I know. So I don't know what to do at this point. I think I'm just going to give up.
When you have to deal with people, I remember years ago when I first moved into my first ever flat, right? I uncovered what had been clearly some sort of scam somewhere along the line in these flats, right? Because I was very naive and didn't really understand all the bills and stuff, right? So I was getting the gas bills, paying them, right? I didn't think about why I was getting more gas bills than perhaps I should have been. I was just paying them, right?
Yep.
I was paying my council tax. And then it all started to unravel when I got a summons to court for not paying my council tax.
Okay.
So I phoned the council tax office and I was on hold for, I mean, I remember this day, it took me about 2.5 hours on a phone to sort this out. I think I was on hold for about an hour. And I said to them, but I'm paying you council tax. Now, what I then uncovered was that somewhere along the line, a flat upstairs, not the people that were living there now, because they went there after me, but somewhere along the line, they were charging the downstairs flat for the gas and council tax.
Genius.
So I've been paying the gas for two flats up to that point, because when this all unraveled, I thought, well, that explains why I'm paying a lot for gas. But same thing. I remember having to phone the gas company and same thing, went through the whole routine. Look, I just, you know, I'm front flat, but I'm also being charged for first floor flat. So we need to sort that out. And they were like, oh, yes, sir. Yes, it's all sorted. And then again, a few weeks later, I get a bill for the gas for first floor flat. So I phoned them up and I said, look, I spoke to you a few weeks ago. I think I'd even taken the name of the person I'd spoken to. I said, I spoke to this person.
Is this the same company as me? Is this Shit Is Gas again?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good.
And this is going back 23 years, so they've always been shit. Right? So I spoke to them and I said, I spoke to so-and-so a few weeks ago. They said they'd updated it and they said, we have no record of you phoning. So I spent hours on the phone with this person sorting it out and you have no record of it.
It sounds all too familiar. I tell you what, though, they've made one fatal flaw in screwing with me. Do you remember at the beginning of this, I told you that my bill has mysteriously quadrupled?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, they've identified there is some fault with their machine.
Right.
And they need to come and fix it. So they are now going to send a human representative to my house.
Hello, Mr. Harmy.
I'm going to be waiting with my unplugged keyboard.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bludgeon this arsehole to death with it while screaming, say my name, call me Mr. Harmy. Trev, I feel this has been an angry podcast. I think we need to calm down a bit.
Okay, yeah.
Shall we end with a bit of fun?
Okay, go on.
Now, a few podcasts ago, we did some of my, I don't know what we called them, mind melters, mind benders.
Oh,
I've got
yes.
a few more.
Oh, yeah, no, these were good fun. Yeah, okay, no, let's do them.
Okay, we'll jump straight into it so we can all chill.
Maybe we should have started with these. There are people who probably haven't got this far in the podcast. They go, oh, God, I can't listen to any more of them. So,
so some of these are a bit macabre, as they were last time, but some of them are just quite interesting.
Okay.
I'll start you with this one. We know our parents for our entire life, but they only know us for part of theirs.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's not really a mind fuck, is it, that one? I mean,
it's just something that you'd probably never thought of before.
No, I suppose, because obviously the general order of things is that they will go before you. So that's obviously true. I tell you what is interesting about...
Go on.
Knowing your parents and them knowing you is, I think it's really interesting. And I'm not a parent, so I don't know how it works the other way. But as you get older as a child, your relationship with your parents changes in many ways as you get older. But there's that thing where you suddenly see them as human beings and not just mum and dad.
Okay.
And you start to really get to know them as people. And I think that's quite an interesting time. Do you know what I mean? I think that, I don't know, I'm sure it changes for different people, but I think you get to probably your mid-30s. And up to that point, they've just been, oh, they're mum and dad. You know, they can do their nagging. They can do that sort of parental thing. And you slip into the role of child when you're with them. And then suddenly there comes that point where it might be triggered by an event in the family, a wedding or some event where you suddenly see your parents in a different light and you might have a conversation with them that you've never had before. And then you suddenly start to get to know them as people and really what their interests are and what their ambitions were. You know, I mean, you might just think, well, your dad works with this and he's done that his whole life. But have you ever asked him what his ambitions were? Maybe he wanted to be in a rock band. Have you ever asked that? And suddenly you might ask that question.
Sure. If this was supposed to be the light, picky end to the podcast, you're getting a bit philosophical.
Well, no, that's interesting. I don't know if that really gets into the depths of the mind when you asked. But I think that's a very interesting thing.
Okay, well, we'll move on. Let's try another one. Today is the oldest you've ever been, but also the youngest you'll ever be again.
Yeah. Yeah, as the clock ticks inevitably towards death.
They're more just facts, really, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, but it's true, isn't it? And I'm quite obsessed with thinking about my own mortality. That's something that I think about a lot. Obviously, that resonates with me, because I do often think that. I think, you know, I'm never going to be, because I'm at that age now as well, where I'm getting to the point, I'm proper mid-age. I'll be 44 this year. If I'm lucky, I'm halfway, but I'm at that point where I've got less in front of me than I have behind me. And that's a scary thought, because yeah, that's what a midlife crisis is, I think, because you get to that and you think, Jesus, like I've got less to go than I've had. And it doesn't feel like I've had enough, because all those hopes and dreams I had have either been shitted on or they've not happened. And now I've just like, no one's going to, you know, I'm on the scrap heap.
I'm starting to feel I should have implemented like a 20-second timer for reaction time to these, and then we can move on. You're getting really depressing with these. Well, They're just supposed to make you go, ooh, and that's about it.
Well, I mean, how do you feel? I mean, it's that thing about being, are you a glass half full or a glass half empty type of person? Because if you're a half glass full person, you'd be, I'm the youngest. What's the thing? I'm the youngest I'm ever going to be. No, I'm the youngest. I'm never
going to be. Today's the oldest you've ever been, but the youngest you'll ever be again.
Right.
I see it. My mentality in life is actually quite, I think, a healthy one, which is, and I apply this to all aspects of life, especially work. You go into it, get up for the day, go into it, expecting the worst, expecting it to be completely shit. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be a really horrible day. And then, anything that isn't as shit as you thought it was going to be is a bonus.
Yeah.
And apply that to life and you'll be all right.
Yeah.
Expect the worst, and anything that's not the worst is good.
So you never expect joy?
No, never.
Right. Okay, well, it's a very bleak outlook, Ben. I understand it.
No, you'll find that way of thinking, you have a lot more pleasant surprises in life than you do crushing disappointments.
Yeah, you're never disappointed.
Yeah.
You just go into something and go, well, this is going to be shit. Whatever it is, this is going to be shit. And if it's not shit, well, actually, that was fine.
Okay, I'm going to move on, but I'm going to try and steer away from some of the ones that I don't think you can go down such heavy channels of thinking with. Okay, so what about this? When you buy a bigger bed, you have more bedroom, but less bedroom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. Two interpretations of the phrase bedroom, isn't it?
It's a little play on words. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Have you ever stayed? Have you been to the States?
I have a couple of times.
I stayed in a motel in the States that had one of those, like, I don't know what you call them. You could probably fit about seven people in this bed. The most incredible size bed I've ever slept in.
Yeah.
And I just think I'd love one of those. I wouldn't mind if that was all I had in my room.
Hang on a minute. Your reaction to this is just, I'd like a big bed.
I mean, I've got a king size, and that's brilliant. I mean, I could never go back to a single. Even when I've been to places where you might have to sleep on a single, you do it, but I'm always terrified I'm going to fall out, because I know that I toss and turn a lot in the night. So when I even get in a king size bed, I think, well, there's more. I can toss and turn even more now than I could with a double. And when I had a bed that size, I mean, I think I just spent all night rolling from one side to the other. I mean, it was the most thing. I've never seen a bed anything like it.
Right. I've got a few more good ones for you. Right. This I think is a good one.
Yeah.
When you think about it, the brain named itself.
Well, I mean,
that's a good one, isn't it?
Well, it is, because my instant reaction was, don't be ridiculous. But then the person who named it would have had to use their brain to name it. So the brain named itself.
Exactly.
The one thing I would say about that is, I think if it's naming itself, it should have given it a better name.
Why? What's wrong with the word brain?
I would have given it, I would have come up with a name like giving it a real classy name. Like a
but double, that's subjective.
Like a double-barreled name.
You know? Brainius Maximus.
Yeah, give it a Latin. It probably has got a Latin name, hasn't it? I mean, Is, I wonder if there is a Latin. I'm going to have to look that up now. I mean, is brain just the word?
I don't know. But that wasn't really the point. Here's one for you. If you rip a hole in a net, it has fewer holes.
Fewer holes, but bigger.
Big intake of breath there.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
If you rip a hole in a net, it has fewer holes.
Yes, it does. But bigger holes.
Well, only one bigger hole.
Oh, you're only ripping one hole. You rip
but
one
you'll have
hole.
Fewer holes. Okay. Make a hole, have fewer holes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you rip a hole in a net, you have fewer holes, but a bigger hole.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is it depends what you're using the net for and whether that's a convenient thing to have or not.
Okay. So, I mean, well, I suppose philosophically, have you created a hole or have you caused fewer holes?
Yeah.
Or have you done both?
Because what you've done is you've joined holes together. So I don't think you've created a hole. You've adapted holes to form a hole.
So by tearing apart, you've brought them all together.
You've united.
One Britain.
You've united. And in the words of Matt Hancock, I was just looking for a bigger hole.
One last one. I think this is going to sum this podcast up nicely. You can never save someone's life, only delay their death.
Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, I agree with the obviously you're delaying
it's
death
true.
Because we all die, but you've saved them in that moment, whatever that moment would have been. You've saved their life at that instant.
Mm, yeah, you're only really delaying a death.
But that's the same for everyone. I mean, that's you might as well just say...
Death is inevitable.
Yeah, and doctors are superfluous because we're all going to die in the end, so what's the point?
Good night!
So there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Interesting episode this week.
Furious episode.
We covered a lot of ground. Just before we go, I've only got one thing to recommend because I've just been watching all the football.
Yeah, me too.
Which has been fantastic, hasn't it? I mean, at the time of recording, we're just waiting for England-Germany, which is on in a couple of hours' time at the time of recording. I'm hoping... It's not that I don't want it to be exciting, but I don't want it to be as dramatic as some of the matches. I just want England to go through, not really any drama, and then I'll be happy. But it's just been brilliant. So I haven't been watching much else. I'll tell you what I did watch. A documentary on Sky called The Return, Life After ISIS.
That sounds deep.
It is, and it follows some women who had gone to Syria to join people who were part of ISIS, and they're all in a camp now, and it follows their stories really. And I didn't know really what to make of it. All I'll say is it challenges your thinking.
Okay.
But I think it's well worth a watch, and
I'll give that a go.
Which leads me on to a little tease about next week's podcast, where it's going to be very, very different next week, because we're welcoming back to the podcast an old friend of ours, Andy Drury.
Yeah.
Now, Andy joined us on the very first episode of the Trev and Ben podcast when he was in Iraq, wasn't he? When we first
met him.
So Andy is an adventure tourist and filmmaker, and he goes to some of the most dangerous places in the world. He's been in the news a lot recently because in an upcoming film, he has interviewed Shamima Begum. And we're going to get him back on because I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. I think we're going to find out. I'm going to talk to him about much more than that, but I think it's going to be fascinating.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be next week's podcast with Andy Drury. I think it's going to be really different to our normal stuff, but it's going to be really interesting. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, and take it easy.
Bye.